disclosure, I have no idea what is going to happen with this podcast or what format we're going to do. So we're just going to kind of wing it like we normally do. But this is not Tokudon, as others may think looking at this episode. I don't know if this will be the first one even, but this is not Tokudon. This is the new podcast, Kaiju Carl's Coffee Corner, where we're going to kind of talk about the things people are interested in and grab a hot beverage and just sort of chat about other things that we're doing and into and things like that. And in particular, I know you are into a, and myself as well, we are into a little thing called The Legend of Dragoon.
Such a little thing. I mean, it's so little, only like a couple hundred million people love this thing, you know?
Yeah, only a couple hundred million, but they still won't do a remake for whatever reason.
Oh, there's plenty of reasons. Plenty of reasons. I'll get into it.
Okay. Well, I know you also have a project that you made specifically based on this, but I thought we'd at least start with like talking about the game, because a lot of people... It's an older game. A lot of people may not know.
Oh my God, dude. 2001. So I don't know if you remember 2001, but the world changed in many ways that year.
Yep.
So we're just going to keep it positive and say this also happened.
The most important was Legend of Dragoon. And I mean that happened in the least offensive way possible.
let's focus on the positives. This game, I think I'm sure I bought it relatively when it came out.
Yeah.
Because I remember being visually taken by the first commercial. Do you remember the commercial that came out for this?
I never saw the commercials. The only thing I ever saw was I had the strategy guide that I got from EB Games, I believe.
I think it was like mandatory to get that because
that thing was a monster too. Like that thing, this game's four discs long, so that thing was a monster. Yeah. And then I also, in like Nintendo Power, like not Nintendo Power, Electronic Gaming Monthly, like those kind of game magazines, I would see ads in there where it was just the spread. Like you've seen the posters where they're on the back, like during the Dragon War kind of thing. Like they're on the back of that big flying thing, stuff like that. Classic posters.
Yeah. Basically, they took all the cutscenes and made them their own little shtick.
Yeah.
But here, I'm going to see if I can find the trailer for you. The commercial. Because the problem with the commercial is that it gives a vibe that doesn't quite match. Mm-hmm. So the visuals, like you said, are the striking thing about this this whole thing.
Yeah.
So let's start with explaining kind of what that's like, because in the trailer you only get snippets of it. So it's high fantasy. If you like magic and swords, if you like you know, the medieval era, kind of like
Game of Thrones, Dark Souls, all that kind of stuff.
It's that kind of vibe that you're getting in this. So if it's kind of your shtick and you like RPGs, this is the most successful JRPGs in the West. Mm-hmm. Let me pop this in the Discord, get you a chance to check it out. It's only 30 seconds, and then get your take on that.
I'll try to describe it since we're an audio podcast this time.
I'm gonna describe it while it's going on here. But
So we have, I assume this is the Dragon War that I'm looking at here. It's a big CG cutscene, essentially.
Yeah, it's essentially it.
Which is kind of what he expected. Like the Final Fantasy VII cutscene or commercial was kind of the same. They just took the CG cutscenes and kind of, wow, that was. So one of the characters just lopped another one's head off, and now it turns into like slapstick comedy.
Yeah.
I don't remember that ever happening on
the game
itself.
So in this cutscene, you have the main character and the another character who are in this mock sword fight that is like in totally CG, and it's not even in the game. It doesn't happen.
Nope.
But he lobs his head off.
Mm-hmm.
He throws his sword down because he's pissed off the guy who got his head cut off.
Yes.
The head... The severed head is on the ground complaining, "Nigel, did you see that? He cut my head off." And
to be fair, that's basically the character's name is Lloyd. That's essentially the voice that I gave Lloyd because he's a little bitch.
Always?
So, always.
It's like, so, and that's the first thing you get after that amazing CG. I'm like, wow, what? I'm still going to check it out. So naturally, when the game came out, I was so hyped on that. I was waiting for it to get silly, and it never did. So it's a whole different palette from what the game actually is.
I've never seen that before, first off. That's wild to me, because I know the game from playing the game, and it is much darker. It is much more serious in tone. The only thing I can think of why they would do that is because in the 2000s, everything was like the edgy commercials, right? Like, everything had to be edge. Like, Crash I don't know if you remember the Crash Bandicoot commercials and the guy in the costume. His thing was always just being an asshole.
I remember all of those, like, you remember the not even just the PlayStation commercials, but it was an era that a lot of shit that would be looked at now as like, why did we allow that kind of shit to happen?
Yeah, it's a lot like of like, one, let's just be offensive, and that's the commercial.
Commercial that I remember from PlayStation is the baby one. I don't know if you remember
the baby one.
It was like a baby PlayStation commercial. I think it was like just a PlayStation thing. Mm-hmm. It's a creepy ass thing. It creeped me out. So it was an official PS3 commercial. And I remember when this came out, I'm like, is this the route that things are going to go? Like, is this how life is going to be now? Yep. We're just going to just watch trippy dystopian commercials and that's kind of the shtick. So yeah, I just found it.
I do remember this commercial.
Yeah. So basically, yes. I don't know if anybody else remembers. It's just this little baby doll sitting in a room with a PS3 and it's just being super creepy.
Yeah. It's basically a stop motion baby oogling at a PS3, and that was absolutely terrifying. I'm very upset that I
you're welcome,
remember so this. Thank you, enjoy your night. Appreciate that.
Going in line with the game being darker, the thematic thing about this game is about accepting and coming to evolve with the changes that naturally happen, and sometimes the changes that are put upon you. Mm-hmm. And letting go of the past. This, because of the lush visuals, you're able to tell this story that expands literally thousands of years. Yeah. And everything that happens in those thousands of years is so dependent on what these characters do here in the moment that either will continue that pattern, destroy everything, or make something brand new. And they that's the whole point of it. It's like each of their stories play into this finality of the world, because ultimately everything has led to this point. This is the make or break of their entire world, and all the stories that they... Sorry, I'm getting a plane because, I love you. you get this truly epic story, and for anybody who hasn't played it, I encourage you to play it, or at least to find a way to experience the story, because so much of it you need to do for yourself. We're going to do the best to break it down, but the nuances, the experience of playing the game as you're going through the story gives you that sense that you have embodied these characters more than we're just going to break it down.
Yeah, because this is a JRPG, so this is very much like... I don't know if it was trying... I'm assuming it was trying to capitalize on the Final Fantasy VII stuff going on. It is very similar style. You have isotopic levels that are on like a 2D plane, essentially, but you can move around. But you have a 3D character. You run around as Dart, the main character. He is your kind of typical protagonist. You know, he's the blonde, hothead sort of thing. He's the fire boy. Yeah. That's what he is.
You get a lot of the palette colors because of all the visuals. The characters are very distinct. Mm-hmm. And color paletted. Dart is the red armored hero, like you said. He's got the headband, typical Western look.
The colors play a lot, because the colors are also associated with their elements. All of the characters have a power of the element, which is nothing new to a fantasy RPG.
But it plays into a lot of the tropes you have.
Yeah,
you have,
and even the story itself is pretty tropey in the grand scheme of things.
Of course.
There's a lot of like, oh, my father, oh, this, and then the story beats are a lot of the same, you know, that kind of thing. Just the way the story evolves over the four discs is very similar.
But you have a lot of the tropes that are done well in each of these character stories, or at least to the point where it's satisfactory. It's not poorly done at the very least. Only one character is kind of shoehorned in there, Miranda. You know, they kind of find a way to give her something worthwhile, and it ends up being one of the darkest stories of the whole thing. It's CG. Mm-hmm. It's a 3D character on a 2D mat painting, basically, and yet the dynamics of everything in there have You have some renders where the water actually moves and it looks very clean. You have fire that's constantly burning you, and a lot of the magic effects that you have in there. So the skylines.
Speaking of magic, I can push because on
this game for hours.
Yeah, like the coolest part and the most unique part is the combat itself. It is a turn-based RPG, but the thing is, they add a system. I don't think the addition system to this, where essentially you have to do quick time events with the press of an X, A, whatever you want to call it. You know,
I've never actually thought to refer it like that, but yeah.
Yeah, they're quick time events. They're essentially quick time events.
Sure.
You have a spinning box that kind of like loads in, and if you hit it on the right time, you continue your combo, and you can equip you equip combos. It's not like just an ever going thing.
As you do them, you unlock more and more and more. And the idea is to actually do it. It encourages you to master it, because by the time you've mastered the one, it's already the next one is available.
Yeah.
And the genius of the addition system, which complements the entirety of everything else, is the interdependence of the addition system. Each attack obviously does damage, mm-hmm. but it also gains you something if you complete the addition.
Yes.
Which is SP points.
Yes.
SP points. Once you, and you don't start off the game super powered. So like every other RPG, you have to progressively become powerful.
Yep.
So once you unlock the ability to become the Dragoon, you gain the SP points towards a level of transformation. Every transformation costs you basically a turn.
Yeah.
So you start off level one, which is your transformation, and you got that for one go. So you get to choose, as you become a Dragoon, what you want to do between attacking and magic.
Yeah. And for the people who may not know, when you say Dragoon, it's essentially you don the spirit of a dragon.
Henshin.
You're literally Henshin. you know, there's a full sequence, and all of these go for a very long time. They're about 20 seconds. They're very long Henshins. And you don an armor based on a dragon that they have a jewel of, and it gives them the elemental abilities. So you basically get, like you were saying, it's timed by your turns. It goes anywhere from 1 to 5. I don't think it gets more than 5, right? I never.
Yeah, no. 5 is the max.
Yeah, 5 is the max.
5 is the max.
But you get either a Dragoon attack, which is a super combo that's extremely difficult to land, or
it is a challenge. If the additions challenge you, and I'm pretty good, but I still have not gotten to the point where I'm confident at all that I will do it every single time.
It's wild. So the additions, it's a pretty steady cadence. You kind of just got to get used to the actual attacks. This thing is a spinning wheel that you have to hit and gets faster every time. And I think it usually does up to 6 or 7, and it gets faster every time. And if you miss one, you just do whatever of the combo you got
of the amount.
Yeah. So I could probably count on one hand out of the 20 years, 20 something years this game's been out, that I have gotten the full Dragoon edition.
I have seen for the any full character Dragoon edition. I have seen Hashel's. I have performed Hashel's full Dragoon edition myself. And that is the only one I've ever performed successfully myself. That one. Every
they
other one, I never get the
absurd
full
to do. And
so let's talk about the characters then. Because of all the difference between them, the genius of the magic and the Dragoon and your normal system is the balance.
Yeah.
Each character obviously has their strengths and weaknesses. Dart is the unfortunate part about the gameplay is that in the battles, you're never able to change Dart. You get 3 characters, and honestly, you only get 2.
Yeah. Just like Final Fantasy VII, if you guys are familiar with the Final Fantasy, you have your main character, and then you swap out the other party members. And I think there's 8 total? 8?
So you have Dart, Shauna, Rose, Hashel, Kongle, Meru, Lavitz, and
that's we'll just count the double characters like Miranda and Shauna the same. And then Lavitz and Albert are the same.
Yeah, so you get those. And they all embody each element. Fire, earth, water, darkness. I think it's called light. You know? Yeah, it's light. Light and...
so you get...
wind? I think fire is wind.
Yeah, you get fire, darkness, light, water, wind, is earth and wind? I guess earth. Yes, no, there's earth. Earth. Yes, because Kongle gets earth.
Yeah. Kongle is earth. Yeah. So each of them are represented by each respective element. And each element comes from a particular dragon.
Yes.
And the way they transform into the Dragoons is by using what is essentially the soul of the dragon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Once a dragon dies or is defeated, so to speak, because it's hard to tell, what they can become at the moment of their death is a gem. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a condensed form of their soul that if it deems you worthy, you would become this dragon knight. Yeah.
It's literally a human fused with the dragon soul. That's what a dragoon is. And it's a organic armor that fuses with them and it spawns, and it is the coolest shit I have ever seen in a video game. And so, I will die on that hill that it is some of the coolest shit in any video game.
Yes. You can turn it off, but why would you?
Yeah, you can turn off the 20-second henshins, but you're here for the 20-second henshins.
You're here for every 20-second henshin.
Yeah, and when you there is an option to, you know, transform all three party members at one time, and all three of them play back to back. So you will watch all of them and you will enjoy every moment of it.
I liked when you get the Dragoons in the story. Let me just tie that real quick.
Yeah.
The story itself revolves so much about these Dragoons that it never cheapens. It's always so much fun to use them. It's and here's the trade-off, what I was trying to get to. Just because the whole point is to become a Dragoon, you have the balance there where, yes, you're uber powerful, but you have shit defense. So you have to decide every battle if it's worth transforming for more than a turn or two that you need to achieve one or two goals.
Yes.
Getting the five bars looks good. Man, just chilling with those five Dragoons, like, I'm not stressing any. Sometimes the challenge in this game is, and that's kind of one of the things that they said it didn't do so well in Japan, was that it was too hard.
I can speak to that personally.
Yes, and absolutely. So because of the difficulty, and not that the AI is very good, but if you don't pay attention, you can easily get wiped out pretty quick.
There's also a couple points where they are like hard jumps in difficulty.
I've
told you about the specific boss fight that I have literally never gotten past this boss in the entirety of this game. At one point in about halfway through disc two, you fight what is called a Wingly, which is basically the anti-Dragoon kind of thing. They're a whole other race. That's a whole other discussion's worth of things.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
We'll
get you fight one of these ladies, and every single time I get destroyed. I have yet to beat this hoe.
She is one of the test.
She's a skill check. She's straight up a skill check.
She's definitely a skill check, but she's absolutely one of those that you have to have the right team or you have to have the right stuff because you only get to have 32 items.
Yeah.
Ever. And that's basically what the three of them carry in their pockets. Yeah. So, like, you have to balance out. And that includes healing items. That includes some weapons. Mm-hmm. That includes usable items. That's everything. Yeah. 32. That's it.
And you have to remember in this fight as well, like, you have healing characters. Like, some of them are healers in general. Some of them are, you know, they heal more when they do Dragoon, and then they can do crazy damage output, Shana, like Lavis.
Yeah, Shana, Meru, and Rose have healing type moves in their Dragoon forms that you can use. But every time you use that, you use magic points.
Yes.
And you don't have, like, a mana pool that's, like, vast. You don't have,
and you're,
like,
using one of those turns for your Dragoon.
And you're using a Dragoon turn. So you have to, one, calculate the mana points that you're going to use, then what you're going to have left versus what's going to still come in the battle. And you can't swap characters.
Nope. You can't hot swap them. Yeah,
that's not hot swapping. So once you have your team, that's your team. So it becomes interesting and difficult. So I understand where you get stuck. So it really becomes a balance of knowing the game, knowing what playstyle fits you, because it's also about that. My team has always been Rose, Dart, and Albert.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first played the game back in, 1945, it was Kongle, Rose, and Dart, because I was convinced that was the powerhouse, and they are. They're the heaviest attackers. Trade-off, I didn't realize, is that each of these characters also come with their own weaknesses that are very weak.
Yes. Like, as someone who put Kongol on his team for this many, many times, because he is a half giant, I think, right? They're half giants.
He's a giganto. He's a full giant. So he's
like 9 feet tall. He's a huge dude. A monster. His whole thing is taking a big dumb axe and bopping someone with it. But he also doesn't have a dragoon form at that point in the story. He could. Oh, I didn't. I never got it before then. So that might be also the issue. So it was kind of like, do I want this dude who can do a lot of damage, but he's not going to be able to help out on the Dragoon front with the special abilities? Or do I pick my boy? He's not really my boy because Lavitz is my boy. But do I pick my boy spiritual successor, I guess, Albert, and do Rod Typhoon 100 times, and then I can just throw the barrier up?
That should have,
so that's kind of the move. So that's the dynamic you're running with in this game, and I think that's kind of what kept me the most interested, because when I play JRPGs and they're turn-based, I can get bored kind of quickly, just because it is very repetitive, all that kind of stuff. But when you have the addition system, you have a guard option, you have the dragoons that have their own sub magic and addition system, and we didn't even talk about when you throw magic that you have to play the how badly can I destroy my thumb game.
Yeah, you have to actually like mash so hard. Mm-hmm. But there is a pattern. It's not just mash. It's also tap, tap, tap. Anyway, at least that's what I figured out. Yeah. So anyway,
you have to mash the button to get the percentage up, and the higher that percentage, the more damage it does.
Including the magics that you're able to do. You're also able to use magic items and items that also attack. And what we're saying is, it's a multiplier that takes the base damage, and then as successful as you are at breaking your thumb, you can get more damage. Yes. There's the ultimate attack item in the game is called the Psychedelic Bomb X. Plot wise, it takes leaps and bounds to get, but it's worth it because
is that your like only ultimate weapon kind of thing?
Well,
I know they all have their own like ultimate weapon. You know, like any Final Fantasy type game, they all have their ultimate like final weapon sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. In this game, and that's the I like this part about this game. It's like the Dragoon Buster, the Dragon Buster, which is the best sword in the game, so to speak. It's the anti-dragoon dragon-killing weapon that the Wingly people came up with. Mm-hmm. You get it in the last fight.
Yep.
You're not able to use it at any other point.
And that's a back-to-back boss fight.
And that's if you use the character that uses it, because it's not darts. You don't. Dart doesn't get it just because he's the MC. You know, he does get the Divine Dragon Armor, which
evens out. There. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
You know, you got this really cool sword that's meant to murder all of my party, but I also became God.
I became the dragon god.
Yeah.
Like quite literally. It is attached to my arm.
Yeah.
Because let me show you what it does.
Yeah. It's literally, you get, if anyone is a fan of Digimon, you get Transcendent Sword and Supreme Cannon as your abilities. Yeah. That's what Dart becomes, because why not? As opposed to just Fire Sword Boy.
but okay, so now you me saying that, you're like, what? Oh, fuck, I'm not even really, this game's not worth playing. Stop Listen, because it's not about having the weapon, it's not even about the damage output, because the idea of the game is balancing your team. The idea of the game is knowing that just because I have this super powerful weapon, she still can die.
Yeah.
She can still get taken out. It's not going to stop anything. Nope. So, boom. The brilliance of this game is defense. If you become a tank, no boss is ever your problem.
Yep.
But that's not something that happens easily either, because of the difficulty of the game. Now, when I tell you random battles gave me PTSD, this game is random battle incarnate.
There's so many random battles.
So, and it's even bizarre, because yes, you have all of those random battles. There's this little icon above Dart's head in the overworld, and it changes from blue to yellow to red.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's your indication that, you know, be ready. And the overworld map is not crazy vast. You know, it's a plotted path. You get to navigate it. There's an entry point, end point, and you can see them because they're indicated with green markers too. So it's
literally like a little area you explore that is pretty much a set path. Like there's little side things you can jump down, but it's pretty much a set path. And then when you go to the overworld, you just follow a straight line to the next little area you can explore. The next town, the next city, the next forest, whatever you're going to next.
Whatever it is you're doing, that's the plotted path. Yep. But that plotted path is littered with danger because it could be two steps, it could be a half a step, it could be three steps, it could be an entire path that you've managed to walk successfully through, and then just at the very end it goes and then you're in a
literally in a, your nose could be inside of the forest you're trying to get to, and it'll go
and then you're in a battle,
and then you're in a battle. Limping and crying, trying to get to the forest in a safe point.
And remind you have 32 items that you can only have limited use of until you can get to a shop or unless you find
30
something.
Of those were always potions for me.
So it's insane. And as many fights as you get into, every fight you get into, say you fight a group of three villains, and it can be from 1 to 3 to 5, I think, enemies that you fight. And for PS1, that was impressive because every battle is fully CG. Each of the characters are 3D models. The background is kind of rendered to the everything is done well. Except I think the purpose of that is to get you engaged because you're gonna see that a lot.
Yes.
And
every area kind of has its own like set battle zone sort of thing. So when you're in the overworld, unless you're like changing, there's a couple spots where you change, like I guess I'll call them countries, you change like terrain essentially, and those change. But while you're in like the savannah, you're gonna go into like the first, I don't know, three areas you go to before you go to like meet King Albert and all
the prairie,
prairie. Yeah, you're pretty much gonna fight in that same one in the overworld. And, you know, that can be a lot sometimes, but luckily the addition system's really cool, so that helps. Yeah.
The problem with all that is that every battle you kill, say you kill 5 enemies, you're getting about 35 experience points, and you're dividing that between grind. So, like, it's not fun, because each level is legitimately thousands of experiences worth of the grind. And you're getting about 6 experience per battle in the normal world.
Yes. But what does even that out for me anyway is with this addition system, every time you perform an addition, you level it up. So you have to do an addition 99 times to max it out. And it gets a little stronger every level you go up. But if you max out all 99 for every character, you eventually get their ultimate technique, which is literally summoning a dragon. So,
kind of worth it,
in my opinion.
every addition unlocks a Dragoon level, unlocks another magic, and the addition becomes more powerful. And then you even get the more powerful additions.
Yes.
But the additions also have different trade-offs. Some are quicker, less damage, but more focused on building SP towards your Dragoon bar.
So I always thought was fascinating when it came to the whole dynamic of it, because you're not just like, you know, the later ones are probably going to do more damage. They have more hits, yada, yada, yada. But like you get what the hell is it called? The volcano. There you go. Volcano.
Oh my God. We didn't even touch that.
We'll talk about that in a second. But like you have your, you know, your super crazy ones you get towards the end, but like the first two, you like they're still useful to you if you do want to switch back to them, because something like Volcano builds a dumb amount of SP for like being a 2-shot or 3-shot, whatever it was, you know, that kind of thing. And I always liked that as well, because it was like, oh yeah, no, I definitely have this one, but it's not like the defuncto one where I'm stuck with this like 5-hit combo now when I really liked this 3 or 4-hit combo.
Each of them have their own thing. And the last, say you're able to do all of them and you unlock them all or whatever. Whatever one you have the timing down with, because there's Madness Hero is one of Dart's infamous additions because of its weird timing. Yes. It has such a weird timing, but it was one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And I stuck with it because it builds a lot of SP and it's so damage. But my idea with Dart was to always get him to Henshin, do the damn thing, get back. You know what I mean? But that's how I use Dart. But other people use Dart to have him, you know, bear the brunt of attacks because of his pretty good defense. You know what I mean? So
He was my glass cannon.
Yeah, the challenge is to make sure that, you know, it's best to your style.
Yep.
I love Rose the most. Rose is my favorite character because of her magic balance and her attack balance and all of her and her lore. Like, the idea is that she's one of the anchor points from the past to now. And a lot of it has depended on her actions, literally, to this point.
Yeah.
And because of her, or rather due to what she decides to do,
mm-hmm.
everything else falls into motion.
Yeah. And we don't have to get too deep into that, because I want people to experience this game.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I want to leave it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of parts, like, I mean, the Divine Dragoon thing.
It's more to the point that this story is so expansive, and it takes so much a part of you to embody it, man. Like, I can't stress how important this game was to me when it came out. At that time is when I was really developing. Well, I was always writing, but I was always trying to find what kind of story I wanted to tell. And I never had an outlet beyond, you know, just thinking, you know, fantasies. You know what I mean? This was so close, so resonated with everything that I like. Dragons, magic, swords, kingdoms, knights, all that stuff that spoke so much to me that it woke that spark.
Yeah.
And I knew what I wanted to write, and I knew what I wanted to do. And,
yeah.
and you know what I mean? I owe that to this game.
Yeah.
Legacy of Kain gave me my tone and mm-hmm. my darkness, my theme, but this is the expression that I wanted.
I don't even, now that you're saying that, like, I don't even know what game I can say gave me that. Like, this was definitely the one where I was like, okay, cool. Like, I had played Final Fantasy games up until this point. I had played a couple other JRPGs. They just never kept me interested very long for the, you know, the four discs or whatever they were. But this was the first one where I was like, okay, you can have an interesting combat system in these games. Because obviously I was playing fighting games and stuff like that to this point.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Street Fighter definitely plays a part of that. You know, we had at that point, like, Alpha 3. We had all kinds of ones on the PlayStation. I think Alpha 3 actually came out the same year. You know, Soul Calibur and Soul Blade were a huge influence on me when I was younger.
Soul Calibur.
Yeah. Like, Soul Blade in particular, I put that dumb amount of time into that, because Soul Calibur 2 didn't really come out on other systems for a while. Wow. And that was more the next era. That was PS2 and all that kind of stuff. But like, Soul Blade, I was playing a lot of, you know, Mega Man X. That series was huge influence on me. You know, just big, dumb, bombastic anime shit, which makes sense for what we talk about and do on a daily basis now. Yeah, that's really cool that it actually influenced you that much. And I know,
we
talked about the, you have a project you wrote based on it, but I didn't realize it influenced that much. That's really cool.
I never really made it that big of a deal, because it's like, it's something that I realized over time.
Yeah.
But legitimately speaking, it's between those two games. So much to the point that I definitely want, I wrote stories that are based in this. I wrote things that have, I have ideas that are based in this world that, one, continue the story, and two, created my own.
Yeah.
So it's that important to me, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I still harbor these passions for this story. So anytime I get a chance to talk about it, like when you said, hey, let's do it, I'm like, yeah, like, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how many other people have this that close to them, but I encourage everybody to find something in this, because there's so much in this story that,
really is.
That you'll pull away from it. You'll pull away from it and be satisfied. And it's not even like it's a bad, that the one thing I will say is, because it's shipped over here, mm-hmm. it had to be westernized.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the negatives about the game story, the game wise, is a lot of the translations are weird. The voice acting is atrocious.
But it's so iconic.
But it's so bad. But it does work in game.
Yes.
Every CG cutscene is made worse by it, though.
No. It makes it charming and adorable.
In vintage hindsight, yes. Sure. But I mean, I remember listening to Dart's voice for the first time, and I'm like, that's not right.
Yeah.
That's not what he should sound like. It's not fair. Dad.
But like, what are you doing? Stuff, again, like, especially the combat voices, like, I had not really heard that in an RPG up until that point. And I don't know, honestly, I don't know if games really did that before then. Because I know in Final Fantasy VII, they didn't have that. And that was like the big 3D RPG to compare everything to at that time. You know,
this was supposed to be the Final Fantasy VII killer when it came out.
Yeah, like, you know, anytime they say that, that's doomed. But, you know, how many Halo killers have we had?
All of them.
Exactly.
So, Halo killed itself.
So. But it was really interesting. Like, so when you do these editions and you complete them, they call out the name of the edition. That was the joke I was making. It was Volcano! That's the classic one that is ingrained in my brain and will never leave. It lives there rent-free, as the kids say.
It gets you through the first step of the game. Like, the first disc of the game is Volcano. And because of that, all the stuff that happens in the first disc is so double slash that one too.
No, but on top of that, there's grunts, and the grunts even say, "Ha!"
But that's
Volcano.
So, I also figured out if you can't quite get the timing for the bar, the grunts are also an audible cue.
Yes.
So anytime you hit the grunt, you can also smash the button. That's how I figured out Hashel, because his attacks are the most bizarre. Yes. Hashel is the one character. He's the melee guy. He doesn't use any.
He is an
weapons.
Old man martial artist, and he is adorable, and I love him so much because he is the punch man.
He's the old Shifu that has his hands behind his back that kind of walks with a hunch and
he trained dart.
I find increasingly more comfortable. Yes. So that's gonna be.
I also find myself standing like that sometimes, and then Beth goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I don't know."
I don't know, but I like it. Like,
it just kind of naturally happens, I think, as you get older.
I know. Like, anyway, so he's that, but he has such weird timing that I had to use the audible cue to figure out his things, and he has an insane amount of hits in his last attack. It's like, I think it's like 12 hits.
Yeah.
But anyway.
There was one in particular. It's called Summon Four Gods. And that was the one that always messed me up. And then Lavitz and Albert have one called Rod Typhoon. And I know you know
Rod Typhoon.
Insane, because he has a spin in there that just has weird timing. It's super strange. And like, the animation doesn't really line up with the timing. Same thing with Summon Four Gods. It has like a bunch of really quick hits, like it's a bop 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 kind of thing. So it was always that middle section that would screw me up so bad.
And it's not something you can just kind of like it does switch up. Like some attacks are slower, some are really one after another. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Meru, which is the wingly of the of the crew. She's the
she's
tiny
a
one
magical with, girl she, for anyone.
She's a Harley Quinn. Yeah, she's Harley Quinn. So she's goofy and she has a big mallet and she bops things.
Yep.
But her attacks are all about speed. So the little hammer, the big hammer that she has, she spins like it's tiny.
Yeah.
And she's incredibly strong. And I wanted to try to use her, but she her trade-off is like she doesn't really have a lot of attacks that are worth it. Because
she is the for real glass cannon in that game. Like, because very easily dead.
Another aspect of the game is the elemental thing. Because they're all based on elements, a lot of the enemies you face have their own respective elements.
Yeah.
So some of your attacks have effects versus half attack versus no effect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not that any attack actually heals, but it'll be like maybe a tenth of what the damage should be.
Yeah.
So Meru has the unfortunate of being water, and water is not strong against many. It's not like there's a yin yang system.
Mm-hmm.
You have direct opposites, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
The one outlier is the Violet Dragon, who has no direct opposite, and that's so broken. So broken.
Because he's got the almighty hands. He's got the righteous fists. That's why he's Hashel. Here.
Yeah. Hashel is the Violet Dragon, and that's the one that has no direct opposite, but at the same time, it just kind of does normal damage against everything.
And I will say one part of this whole mix, because we're throwing a lot of the combat terms and stuff around, and I apologize for anyone who's like, what is it that, what are they even saying?
What are they talking about?
But one of the biggest like mental damage things that ever happened to me in this game was when you learn about counter hits in your edition. So you find out that while you're trying to do these quick time event combos, they'll throw a circle in there because the enemy is trying to counter hit you. And if you fail that, they'll interrupt your combo and you take damage.
And the first time
that happened to me, it was kind of like finding an illusory wall in Dark Souls. It was like, oh God,
What just happened?
They can all do this.
That means you just go around smacking every wall for like 3 hours.
Yeah. So every time, like, not only I'm trying to learn an addition, but I'm like, is this because like you kind of get a cadence when the enemies will do it. Like every enemy type kind of has a cadence to when they'll try and counterattack, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here trying to learn something like summon four gods or Rod Typhoon.
A lot to figure that out, because that takes a while to figure out the little nuances.
So that's. Like, I don't know if I ever told you this, but the most recent time I went to go through, I maxed out all of Dart and Lavitz's additions in Helena Prison.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. So dude,
I don't even do that. Holy shit.
Helena Prison, for anyone who does not know, Helena Prison is the first, like, big air quotes, dungeon that you go to. Yes. This is where you fight the first boss. This is where you finalize your first three party members. And the bow users, Miranda and Shauna, they don't have combos. They just do like one shot pops kind of thing. Dart and Lavitz, I maxed out as many. I think you only get the first four for each of them because Lavitz can't get many more for reasons undisclosed. Yeah. And Dart, you have to get the Dragoon, I believe, to unlock a couple more later. But I 99 for the first four of each of them in Helena Prison. I maxed that out. So I had the soldiers in there down to a science where I could tell when they were going to counter, and it was like I could do it with my eyes closed.
So, okay. So that's where you did it. Yep. I didn't do it there. Nope. I did it in the forest, like on the second disc or some shit like that. Mm.
But yeah, no, I maxed that out in Helena Prison is where I got everyone.
And no, I had to do it in the prairie on the third disc after I've gotten everything, because once I got Madness Hero, I was set, and I got through the rest of the game.
The only reason I did that was because I knew this hoe that I could never defeat, I was like, I'm going to be uber prepared for her. So I maxed all those out, and then I played the game, didn't do any grinding after that, and got behind again and still didn't beat her.
It just really got you that bad.
It got me that bad. I'm a little traumatized. That might be one of my like video game PTSDs where like I don't know if I can actually ever play against her, and if I finally beat her ever, I'm killing the entire game immediately.
Well, I'm not going to give you anything. Good luck.
Yep. That's fine. That's pretty much how it's been forever. Yeah, no, this game is like cemented in my history of gaming things. This was my Dark Souls before Dark Souls was even a thing. Like I have yet to get past the point. Like I said, it's about halfway through disc two where you fight this girl, and I have yet to get past her in my 32 years on this earth.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I played the game, I had the strategy guide, so I obviously cheated like a bastard.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where I didn't even need it because I used it for the first two discs, and I was so over the spoilers by the way the book is laid out that I was like, no more.
Yeah.
Like
I used it strictly to find the Stardust, which are kind of like your feathers from Assassin's Creed. There are a bunch of hidden... literally hidden. Like there's no indicator on the map at all.
No,
you just have to know where it is.
No,
there isn't.
No, there's no blinking.
There's no noise even. You just have to know where they are. You basically have to do the illusory wall thing where you comb every corner mashing on triangle or X, whatever it was, until you find them.
Remember, it's PS1 era, so everybody was already doing that in games because it was and they're in such crazy places. Yes. Like I remember the one because I had the guide, and the guide was wrong. It showed you the wrong picture. It explained to you where it was, but my dumbass was looking at the picture. So I'm clicking and clicking and clicking and going. It's the purple flame dragon in Dole's castle. There's one just underneath the purple flame. And in the picture, the picture shows the dragon's head. So I'm clicking on the dragon's head. I'm like, that makes so much sense. Obviously, it's in the dragon's head. Duh. No, it's on the side underneath it. You fuck.
I remember one in particular, very similarly. It's when you're going through one of the forests. It's a little bit later in the game. I think it's going like towards... it's after the second or third time you fight Kongol.
You fight him a lot.
Yeah, you fight Kongol a lot before he joins the team. Like, he's like your main... your main dude. He's your... I wouldn't say Sephiroth. He's not to that level, but like
he's your Team Rocket.
He's your Team Rocket for a while before he joins the crew. And at one point you're going through this forest where there's a bunch of soldiers like fighting each other, and there's some from like Helena Prison and stuff like that, and they're just fighting, but you're in this like broken swampy kind of layout. And I remember specifically because I found it by accident that it was like this really off-beaten, you couldn't even tell there was a path to get to it, in a fireplace that just looked like a brown square on like mush. And it was like, nope, there's one in there. And I was like, how was anyone supposed to know this was here? It honestly looked like it was part of the background. It looked like you couldn't even go over there.
So the Stardust is an annoying side quest, yes. But it is an important one.
Yes.
But it's not important to the story.
No.
It's important because in order for you to truly experience what this game can offer you, you have to fight the hardest boss in the game. Mm-hmm. The hardest boss is not Nobu Frama, the last boss. It is Faust. Faust is Nobu Frama's Merlin, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He was such a powerful dude that Nobu, who was basically like ancient, let's call him Super Hitler. he was the wingly leader that was so elitist, so racist that they suppressed every other race to become every other species, race, everything in existence to be subjugated under them so that they could be the best. Just because. But because of that, he also, oh my God, I don't know how deep I want to get there. But let's say that there in the evolutionary process there was something that was going to come after them. Mm-hmm. He was scared of that. He took the step to basically tear its soul from its body, and that's what kicked off the story.
Yeah.
Okay. So good because enough. Of all that, yeah. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
I didn't forget where I was going because I was about to dive deep into that.
you looked over the edge and were like, do I jump?
I was like, do I do that to these people? No. Okay. No. So
no one deserves that.
No. So Faust is locked away in this tower that you can only unlock after you do the Stardust quest. Mm. But holy crap, if you're not ready, you have to, the game does enough to progress you level wise to get through the game. You know, each boss gives you such extreme amount of damage that, excuse me, experience that you can make it through the game leveling just on the boss fights, just strictly that, and be okay. Roughly, I think you'll be at between 35 to 40 level, but the cap is 60 if you can grind it out. I got to about 50 something, like I know I grinded it out just because I knew that fighting this guy was going to take everything I got and more. Mm-hmm. So legit, I didn't beat him at all the first couple times I tried to fight him because he is the heaviest damage magic user. And because of the circumstances of the battle, I won't go too much into it, but you need to have your everything you need in line and have a strategy to go into it because at the end of it, it legit becomes RNG.
Great.
My favorite because thing of ever. I won't spoil it too much. Just be ready that there's so much magic that you have to have enough magic defense.
Great.
All right.
Great. I love RNG. It's my favorite thing ever. I love non-skill based skill checks.
it's so cheap, but if you can get through it, you're good. You know what I mean? And you'll see. But anyway, even stuff like that, even the annoying impossible to find Stardust has a significance to the story overall. Yeah. And it just fills it out that little more because you didn't know about Faust unless you went through that side story.
Yeah.
And then you come to understand that there's lush history and this lush world that has been given to you, but only like how people do it now with the souls and Elden Ring and all that, how they piece this together, that's basically what it's giving it to you there.
Yeah.
And I found that, when I found that, I was like, dude, this game is like my favorite of all time. I can't express how much this game meant to me growing up because of the impact it left on me and the impact it still has on me. Like, I can still listen to the music in this game. That's like this the one theme song in this, If You Still Believe. I think that's what it's called. But it's the theme song to the game, and it's a full orchestral, beautiful song sung by a French singer. I still listen to that shit because of how much I like it, but two, it brings me back to that game. That song plays at the credits when you get there, and the experience that you have as you see those credits roll by and you're reflecting on your journey every time, that's what I think back on. Playing this game, not just the song, just oh man, that was so cool. No, I was 2001 when I was 86 years old. I was loving playing this game, you know, like
And it's weird too, because like I have never been someone who latches onto music in video games, right? Like it's always been, if I recognize it, that must mean it's good because I can actually recognize it. I don't go into a game thinking like, oh, the sound design, you know, that's really important. And I have evolved that mentality over the years because that is really important. And I think if you are recognizing it, it's either very good or very bad. So it's one of those kind of things. And like the opening theme, the menu title theme, literally, I can't like not. When I think Dragoon, I think that. I think the bam, 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 bam at the end of a fight.
Yeah.
And then I also think like Volcano, Rod Typhoon, all those call outs. Like, I think of the audio first for Legend of Dragoon. And this is coming from a dude who doesn't give two flying farts about audio most of the time.
I dig it. You see what I'm saying?
And yeah. It's like, that's crazy.
And Dark has a theme song that plays at every important moment and every turning point of the story. And it's only like a minute and a half, but that minute and a half is like heart racing, heart throbbing. Let's fucking go. You know what I mean? Like, once you play the game, you'll hear it cue up. You'll know what I'm talking about. And I'm telling you, the music pushes this game to another level.
And it's every time the thing like, oh, they're attacking, and then it'll just kick on and you're like, oh, okay, it's go time, let's do this. But so, the music is just so good in this game.
So yeah, the random battles suck, but the music is dope, so it's kind of, you don't get tired of
that's
it.
What I'm saying, like, no matter what the grind factor, because this game is extremely grindy. It is extremely grindy. Yeah.
But, and you'll kind of feel like it's pointless because it takes forever to level.
Yeah. But there's stuff in there, like the addition, the music, all that kind of stuff, that kept me invested in doing the grind. You know what I mean? Like a regular RPG, like a Final Fantasy, I'm not necessarily going to grind super hard in that game.
And especially with a battle system as engaging as this. And that's, I guess it's kind of the trade-off. Because of how engaging it is, each battle is going to take you about 5 to 10 minutes.
Yes.
You know, much longer battles. Depending on what you got going on. Yeah. You're going to be in these fights for, like, the final battle is a good hour. Yeah. You're fighting for a good hour because you're going through a lot. I'll say that.
Cutscenes, henshins, all that kind of stuff.
but what I mean is like this: these battles get you acclimated to that because you're going to experience that in this game. You're not doing thousands of damage to an enemy. You're doing hundreds, tops. Maybe 1,000 tops. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not that kind of. Early on, let me correct myself. Early on, because by the end of the game, you're breaking worlds, and it's just whatever. But that's just JRPG.
Yeah. Let's go fight God. Okay, sounds good.
You're my friend. I have a wooden sword. I will crush the world.
Pretty much. And like, it's that kind of like cool power scaling also in this game that I think worked really well. And they made every battle feel like an event, right? Like between the music and the addition system, all that stuff. Like it comes together to make every battle feel like an experience. When you do get to boss fights, there's some really cool shit you haven't seen before then. Like, there's straight up moves you just can't dodge, ignore, whatever. And it's like, you're going to either eat this or you're going to block it correctly. And then you're going to counter because they're usually down for a turn or two afterwards. But like every single battle, no matter it's a boss, whether it's the random like murder birds or whatever they were called in the prairie. some of the names are ridiculous.
So I think a cockatrice is one of them.
Yes, cockatrice is one of them. But like, no matter what you're fighting, it just feels like this epic moment, and it's like, oh no, like it feels like everything is high stakes when like it's an RPG. Not everything is super high stakes, but like they give you this grandiose sense while you're fighting like a little Geodude that's kind of just hanging out there.
And you have to also take into the account that it's not just attack, attack, attack. Some of these monsters you face, random monsters, have powerful magic attacks and they can hit you and really wreck you. So say you're attacking with Dart and you're getting pretty good and you're in the middle of a combo, he'll break your combo, you fuck that up, you get knocked back, it's not your turn the next turn, so Dart just took a little bit of damage and then gets followed up by a magic blast, he's out the game. Yep. Then you have to take your next turn to either heal him or take out that threat. So it's, oh my god, this game is so much fun.
It's very, very well done. And I highly recommend it to everyone to go check it out. It is on PS1. They haven't released it on anything in a hot minute. But there's lots of emulators you can find very easily.
So the reasons it never got a sequel was because of the poor sales in Japan. It did amazing here in the US. And dude, to this day, there are still petitions for the sequel.
Yeah.
And there's still people who want to get something going. So I was always on board for anybody who's trying to get that going, because sign me up first.
I think part of the issue right now is also rights, because I think it's kind of in a rights limbo. Because Japan Studio did have the rights. They are now dissolved. They became part of Sony. So, I mean, I think it's Team Japan Studio, something like that. They did have the rights. And the head of Bluefin, actually, who did Bluefin, or Bluepoint. I'm sorry, Bluepoint. Bluefin. That's a different company. That's the other podcast.
Shout outs to Bluefin, guys.
What up, guys? Bluepoint, the head of Bluepoint Studios, is a huge fan of Legend of Dragoon and wants to do a remake a la Shadows of the Colossus and Demon Souls. Like that, what he wants that to be one of his projects, and I think that would be so cool, because they take the guts of that game and then just give it a new coat of paint, essentially. And it's very little things, but it makes it beautiful and fantastic.
They had Dark as a DLC for the All Stars game.
Yes.
No, they canceled it.
Yes.
So you know they're considering it. If that recently this came up, so what's the holdup, man? Yeah. Come on, get it together. But yeah, so in terms of walking away and looking back, I can't stress enough. I want people to experience this for the first time, get an emulator, buy it. If you find the
original, I have a physical copy right over there.
I was about to say, if you have one, please find me one, because I
have one.
Pristine.
Right over there. It is beautiful. Case isn't broken. All the discs aren't scratched. It's fantastic. The only thing is, I wish it was the black label, not the greatest hits, but I'll take greatest hits. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. That's I have my original Tekken 3 case is the greatest.
There you go.
I still got that stash somewhere.
I still got Soul Edge over there too. That's a whole other conversation.
So anyway,
I think that's enough to like get people the idea and what the story itself means to you, but you're not getting off the hook without telling us about the story you wrote.
All right.
You're not getting away from that one, motherfucker.
That's fine. Cool. Okay, so I have adapted it since then to become its own thing. It's kind of
like most things.
Well, yeah, it's jumped off to become its own little story. But the original idea, and this is 2003, Rob. You know what I mean?
Okay.
The original idea was, oh man, without spoilers, in the distant future, after the end of this story, let me reiterate that these people are human, so you know, life and death happens. Okay, so anyway, thousands of years in the future, the inheritors of all of their spirits have taken different paths, we'll say that, and each spirit has become its own thing in its own way, in its own region. The red dragon spirit travels to this other country where the person who harbored the red dragon spirit becomes kind of a dick, okay? And the red dragon spirit then betrays by not recognizing them as the leader anymore. So the former red dragon person who lost the spirit is now chasing the new red dragon person in that country.
Okay. I follow so far.
This red dragon person is hauling ass to a whole nother region, and comes across who is the black dragon person. So it's a rehash of the original story in my own way. The black dragon person is the main character, and we don't know that right away, because once the new red dragon person finds them, the former red dragon person actually ends up killing them.
Great.
So as they die, their will overpowers or fuses with the soul of the red dragon, becoming a new kind of power that powers up the black dragon.
Okay.
So you, rather than having your normal dragon form, which is something that I would have evolved to be something that's kind of like how Super Saiyan becomes, how they're just like normal now.
You just hang out in it kind of thing.
Yeah, you just hang out in it. The Dragoon armor would have a form of defense. It would evolve. But the power up would be the human soul fused with the dragon soul to power up the Dragoon.
Okay.
Okay. So this Dragoon, the new Black Dragoon, goes out on the world to, one, to escape, because as powerful as he is, he's, you can't fight a 10,000 League army, but watch Legion
me.
Army.
Watch me.
Well, let me just, for the sake of the story, I had to come up with something. And what I did was, that king, that former Red Dragoon dictator dude, he hires all of the remaining Dragoons as bounty hunters to hunt this Black Dragoon down. As this Black Dragoon defeats them, he fuses their souls with their dragon souls, creating new power-ups, new weapons, new things to finally take on the king, who reawoke the super virage and the will of without spoilers, there's something that kind of continues after the ending.
Yeah.
That I bring back.
Nice.
Angrier and warped.
Yeah. And you said a word just now that people may not be familiar with. It's virage. It is essentially like the anti-dragoon weapon. Anti-dragon weapon.
Think of it like a Cthulhu, like a squiddy.
Yeah, it looks almost like the weapons from Final Fantasy VII, except organic. Think of those, but like organic. And you know, you fight it a couple times, and some of them are, you know, half broken. Some of them, when you finally get to a full one, it's this big, like, oh my god.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of it. Like you fight a Virage about, like, I don't know, 8 times in the whole game, and you never get a prime one until even the end.
Missing some limbs, or like can't really walk around, something like that.
And the battle that you have with it is like, holy crap, if this is what they had to face, no wonder people were dying left, right, and center.
Like these are like titans. Like, they're just around. There was a ton of them back in the day.
Legitimately, that's what the Winglies came up with to be like, all right, you humans have dragons. This is what we got.
Yeah.
There's your dragon.
Here's our mecha to fight your titans.
Brilliantly done. And so I bring a lot of those, not a lot, but enough of those elements to my personal take on it, and you might feel differently, is that the endings that they gave us left enough to do that, and I gave it a more conclusive ending.
Okay.
So,
I mean, you try hard enough, I think you can make an ending out of anything, honestly.
It's true, but it's rather to the point that I don't think, like, when I end something, it's got to be, you know,
finite.
Not a finite, but a more satisfying ending. You know what I mean? Like, not so much possibilities for, well, but maybe, you know what I mean?
It, like, shouldn't feel like a cliffhanger.
It shouldn't feel like you could. It shouldn't feel like you could if you wanted to. That's more what I'm aiming at.
Okay.
Because this ending, I feel like you could, and I did.
Yeah.
So, and I wrote this story back in 2003, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm literally, like, being bombarded by this inspiration, and that's kind of what I get at, is like how important the story was. It's like, it wasn't just that I was making a fan fiction. Like, it wasn't just because
I mean, it was, but yeah.
Well, it wasn't just because of that. It was inspiring this passion that I hadn't discovered, and this direction that I knew I was going to go in.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now looking back, I owe a lot to this and this opportunity to just, you know, kind of get it out there and express it again. Really, really struck a chord, and I really want to thank anybody who also likes this game, because of how loved it is. I can still go online and I still find people talking about it, and there's still a chance. You know what I mean? There's still a chance that someday we'll get a sequel.
One day. Prequel. What was the medium of your planned story? Like, were you planning on doing a comic book, a manga, a video game? What was your movie?
So it was initially, I always write to make like a comic, but more like a motion comic. I've always liked that since I saw the first one in XYZ years ago.
Okay.
So every time I come up with a story, that's the initial medium I picture before it evolves into whatever it's going to become.
Gotcha.
But yeah, because of the lush pictures and the lush visuals, I wanted to emulate that style and yet place it in a future. That what we I do want to say real quick, it's 11,000 years that you're gonna know this history is. It's 11,000 years, and they never make it out of the medieval age. So,
but are we talking like medieval still, or are we talking like early industrial age, kind of medieval? What are we talking?
Well, that's what I was taking it to, is the 11,000 years of this, of the original Dragoon story. Mm-hmm. They never really make it out of the Middle Ages. So I just progressed it to the industrial age. Okay. I put a lot of steampunk into it.
Gotcha.
And that was when I first got on my steampunk kick, and mm-hmm. I realized that I don't like robots.
So that was the origin.
Yeah.
Got
it. I don't like robots, but you know, that's a personal thing. It's nothing against the idea.
It's fine. I, for one, accept our robot overlords. So that's cool.
No, we're good. We're good. Goodness gracious. So yeah, man, I love this game. I hope that someday something comes out of it, but yeah. I think I'm going to try to retouch that story.
Oh, okay. So it's not the magnum opus corpse looming over you right now?
No, it's not, actually.
Because I can tell you, I could do a whole... I'm probably going to do an episode on my personal magnum opus that's essentially a corpse looming over me. Like a dead titan. Yeah.
I mean, again, my story would do a lot of spoilers, so mm-hmm. I can't really get into that one too much. I did write a side piece that was just about a kid who imagines the Dragoons mm-hmm. coming to life. And each of his teachers were one of the Dragoon spirits. And
he got so it was literally like a slice of life for you, is what it was.
It was a slice of life for me.
It was what's going on in your head in 2003.
and they taught him some kind of life. It was so, so campy. But I'm like, you know what? I'm inspired. Like, yeah. Dude, do I still have that? Oh my God.
Well, if you find it, you can send it over. I'll put it in the... I'll attach it with the show notes and stuff. We'll get a little imagery album going.
Oh my God.
Dude. Oh my goodness. That's Legend of Dragoon, folks. I think that's a good place to end it, honestly. I don't know what's going to come of this podcast or what direction we're going to go, but we started with Legend of Dragoon, so can't argue with that.
I dig it. I hope everybody digs this because we definitely want to keep this going. Tell us about some of the stuff that you liked growing up. What inspired you? Because this bringing up a PlayStation game, I never thought would have impacted me so greatly.
Yeah.
You know, what's your story like that, man?
Me?
We'll get there.
Oh, yeah. I'd have to think about it, honestly. I'll have to think about it for like the next episode or something. Mega Man X was definitely a big one, like I mentioned. That was like my series for a long time. That and Street Fighter and Bloody Roar, actually. Bloody Roar was a big one.
It takes a minute because we planned this episode and it took me the entire time to get to this point to realize every aspect that this triggered
in. Yeah, I definitely have to revisit a lot of that stuff. Like Legend of Dragoon was on there, but I don't think it was like as deep as an influence as you. It definitely was. That was like, while everyone else was playing Final Fantasy, I was playing Legend of Dragoon sort of thing. So that was my RPG, but like RPGs also weren't super... I didn't get into RPGs until I was much older. I didn't have the attention span for it, honestly. So I would have to think about it, but we'll touch on it on another episode of Kaiju Carl's Coffee Corner. Yeah, so I think that'll about do it for here. If they want to find you on some other things, where can they find you?
Sorry guys, I'm rob6echoes.se@gmail.com. You can find me at the Tokudon Podcast on Sundays. You can give me a quick email so I can kind of listen to all of your creepy stories. I'm doing more recordings this weekend or next weekend, sorry. So hit me up, send me your stuff.
Yeah. And I am Kaiju Carl himself. You know, it's a little whatever to name it after you, but it's cool.
Right.
It's fine. Oh, it's fine. He's
gonna tell you nothing.
Yeah. At Kaiju Carl on all the socials, and then twitch.tv/KaijuCarl, where you can see us do our tokusatsu stuff and also play some video games and probably talk about a lot of these things anyway. So, yeah, that'll about do it. That is the one in the books. I think it might be the first. Yeah, that is the first one.
Not dying. Love it.
Dying. Thanks so much for hanging out. We'll catch you guys later.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
What the hell is that?
Breakfast. It's basically just like a power drink with enough sugar in there that I don't need coffee.
Great.
Yeah. But it's called Nutriment. It's not good. It tastes good. It's not like one of those power drinks that like tastes like you're eating a camel's ass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. Lovely.